track section number 29549, which is John McGough, Reel 9. Now, what happened when you were liberated on the 2nd of April 1944 at Bad Orb? What do you remember of the, what happened?
Well, we were liberated by American infantry. And I was very impressed with the efficiency of the American army, enough within about 2 or 3 hours after liberation. They came along with Negro troops with mobile showers, something we'd never seen in the British Army. I was showered, deloused. All our old clothes were burned or taken away, and we were issued with American uniform. And I ended up as a corporal in the American infantry.
How did the uniform compare? What do you think of the American uniform?
Well, we thought it was a bit smarter than ours. And very good quality cloth.
Noticeably better then?
Noticeably better, yes.
Now, what about food? I mean, because they have to be careful sometimes when you've been a POW with it, eating too much can make you ill. Were you warned?
Yes, we were warned not to eat too much and not to overindulge, though there was plenty of food. And in fact, just after the shower, an American canteen came along where you could get coffee and donuts, manned by American ladies, I presume the Red Cross or some voluntary organisation. And we had some of those. But I was fairly sensible and just ate what I had to. And but some people overate and became sick. And also, we left the camp in about a fortnight's time, but in that fortnight...
So what were you doing in that fortnight?
We're just getting back to a sort of a disciplined organisation, responding to the orders of our NCOs and Sergeant Major, and attending, unfortunately, the funerals of British prisoners who died after liberation, where we went along and attended the burials. I went to about...
Were there many of them?
Well, I went to two, I think, but there were a lot of others who died, unfortunately. It was a liberation, and yet it wasn't, because they died shortly afterwards.
Now, there's one case where you went out and they were shooting, the Americans were shooting. Tell us about that.
Yes, we went out. The American came along one day and said to me and my colleagues, they'd like to come with us. So we went out on the, I don't know if it was a jeep or a small military vehicle of the same type. We went out towards dusk, and every time they saw a light anywhere, they just shot at it. Without anybody ordering them to, the private soldiers and the American infantry. Now, that would have never happened to the British Army. We would not be allowed to fire without a direct order from a senior officer. But otherwise, they were very friendly and looked after us particularly well.
Now, what about the flight back?
As far as I'm aware, within a fortnight, roughly after about a fortnight there, still in American uniforms, we flew back from Frankfurt Aerodrome and landed at RAF Benson in Oxfordshire.
Remember what sort of aircraft it was?
Dakota.
And what do you remember about the flight?
Well, it was nice to get in the air again and not have the responsibility of flying it yourself. We enjoyed the journey. And of course, the thought that we would soon be a seal of families and all the friends made it a very, very exciting event for us.
Was there any sort of reception when you got back?
Yes, we got to RAF Benson in Oxfordshire, and there were lots of ladies there, volunteer ladies, who were supplied with British Army uniforms. They sewed on our badges of rank, flying badge, and divisional signs. So once again, we were like British soldiers.
Now, what about, were you given leave straight away?
Yes, we were given leave after a short while, and I think I had about 6 weeks leave.
Was that back at your hometown, Smethwick?
Back in my hometown, I went to see my mum and dad and my brothers and sisters at Smethwick, yes.
So that would be April through into late May?
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, it was about 6 weeks, yes.
Now, what sort of reception did, I mean, I know it's a bit... what was it like when you got home? How did your family react?
Well, when I got home, I also remember my younger sister who still lives in Birmingham, and she was only a young girl at the time, And she said she saw me coming up the street, and she said the first thing I did was hold her and twirl around and clasp her. So pleased to see her. And she said she always remembers that. Of course, my mum was in tears. All the neighbours were out as well to welcome back a prisoner of war. I was only one of many, but in my particular area of Smithy, I was the only one on our street. And in a sense, I was a bit of a personality returned prisoner of war. And I also remember the kindness of the neighbours. In spite of the rationing, they gave eggs and food to help feed me up.
Now, what state were you in medically? I mean, what about your weight loss? How bad was it?
I lost quite a few stone of weight. I was thin and sort of haggard.
Do you know how much weight?
No, I'm not quite sure at the moment, no. At least 2 stone.
Any other symptoms? Or problems?
Yeah.
Talk about neck boils and...
Yes. Due to the fact of being in a prisoner of war, I was run down. I had a lot of trouble with boils in my neck and the general not feeling so well when I got home initially.
And how long did that last for?
Well, when I went back to the army in another 6 weeks, they had gone by then, but it caused me trouble for quite a few weeks after I returned home.
Now, what about, so you had 6 weeks leave, so you'd be on leave during VE Day, would you be? Do you remember VE Day? Was that at home?
Yes, I was in Birmingham, in uniform in Birmingham, and outside the Birmingham Hippodrome Theatre. And there was great celebrations out there, and I joined in with all the soldiers and civilians.
What kind of celebrations? What was everybody doing?
Well, embracing each other, laughing, talking, happy celebrations. Complete strangers talking to each other and embracing.
A good night then?
Good afternoon, yes.
Good afternoon. Now, so what happened then? After 6 weeks, you're posted, aren't you, number 3 crash camp, what's that?
Well, it was a camp where prisoners of war were sent to be brought up to date on what was happening, what happened when they were away, how the war went and what change there were in the army, and also to do some military training to get you back into harness again so you hadn't forgotten all your military skills.
Now, what type of military, what do you remember of your time there then? You'd get there, late May?
Well, I presume it is May, yes.
And what do you remember of being there?
Well, the number of lectures we had, visiting officers came along to lecture us, and with great emphasis on what was happening in the Far East, because we still had the Japanese as enemies. And they told about what they knew about the Japanese army, what they thought the intention of the Japanese were, and that we had, in all probability, we still had the Japanese to fight. And telling us what had happened while we were away, what change had happened in the country, and how the war had gone, particularly in certain sectors, how the war had gone in various parts of the world. But great emphasis on the Japanese army and the caliber of the Japanese soldier.
And anything else happened while you were there? Were you there long?
I just can't remember now how long we were there.
You seem to have gone to Northumberland and Roussillon Barracks at Chichester as well.
Oh, yes.
Is that a similar thing?
That's a similar thing. There's one particular episode I remember when we were at number 3 crash camp. We went to Morpeth one day. My colleague and I got plenty of spare time. They didn't sort of overwork you. And we met these 2 girls at Morpeth. And I'll never forget them because we met them, went to and had some meal and a drink and really enjoyed the company. The next morning, we returned to camp. The next morning, when I put my hand in my breast pocket of my uniform, there was a note written in lipstick, red lipstick, said Station Hotel, 3 p.m. Obviously, it was they wanted another assignation, but unfortunately, we were not able to go. Every time I hear about Morpeth or that part of the country, I remember these two girls. What a pleasure it was to have two nice, decent girls and to get sort of back to normal again. Just a little thing in life which I've never forgotten. And as a matter of fact, I still got the note that they sent. Still got it.
Anything else? Anything?
Well,
you went to Chichester then, didn't you?
Yes, we went to Jerusalem back to Chichester. Again, this was more emphasis. We'd had been lectured about the Japanese and everything at Morpeth. Oh, sorry, I made a mistake here. We went one day to Whitley Bay, not Morpeth. Sorry, it was Whitley Bay we met the girls.
I got you. When you met the girls?
When we met the girls. We went to Jerusalem Barracks in Chichester. And there again, we were concentrating more and more on military skills and not so much lecturing because we'd lectured to.
How were you taking to military skills after all this time off? I mean, well, it wasn't that, it was 6 months, but you know.
Yeah, well, we learned some things that we learned about how to plant explosives and set booby traps and that sort of thing, which really wasn't part of our duty. That was the engineers usually to do that. So it was another lot of military training as well.
Now, the next thing, from July 45 to February 46, you seem to go to a variety of RAF bases.
Yes, we went from one aerodrome to the other.
Now, and was this with your unit? Or, you know, were you back with a glider pilot regiment?
I was back with a glider pilot regiment.
Now, which squadron by then? Not sure.
I'm not quite sure. I was originally in C Squadron, but it may have been D Squadron, if I'm not mistaken.
Now, where did you rejoin them at?
Just one moment.
First one seems to be Fairford.
Well, we went to RAF Fairford, RAF Shepherd's Grove, RAF Wormingford in Essex. Those are the three. I can't remember which order we went to these aerodromes.
Now, what were you doing at these aerodromes?
Flying practice. And whilst we were at RAF Fairford, I'd never flown the American Waco glider, never in my time with the regiment, and we converted onto the American Waco glider.
Now, what did you think of that?
Well,
the Waco.
Not a lot really, because its load was just, whereas we could take a jeep and a trailer and the horse or glider, you'd need two Wacos to take the same thing, one with the jeep and one with the trailers, and if they were separated, of course they were no good, one without the other. But I particularly remember the control column which came down from the top rather than out of the floor like I did on the horse. And if you wanted your co-pilot to take over, you just swung the control column over to him. Whereas in other words, there was one control column which could be used between the two pilots. With the Horser glider, there were two control columns, separate control columns. You didn't have this business of switching one to the other.
So, any problems, or I mean, you got used to it reasonably quickly.
Oh, no problem. After about half an hour, just one joule.
Were you doing many flights in training? Because the war was finished. I mean, you must have been there when the war finished.
Not a lot. Very, very little flying. And when we were at Fairford, we were farmed out to local farms to help with potato picking, because there were so many soldiers with not a lot to do, and a shortage of labour on the farms, and we went potato picking.
What do you remember of that?
I remember a very, very bad back. I thought I was a young, fit man. It was when you go along potato picking, and all of us complained about the bad backs. It looked easy, but it really wasn't. But we enjoyed, and the farmers and the people who used us were very, very kind to us.
Anything else going on there? There seems to be a joke about a practical joke between huts.
Well, it's nothing really. We always played practical jokes on each other. I remember that a practical joke being played upon us, and we knew the perpetrators, so we secured the front door of the hut, went up and stuffed a blanket or something down the roof, and they were smoked out. Got her own back, you know. Just simple thing, nothing. Nothing spectacular.
Anything else happening? I mean, were you thinking about demobilisation? I mean, what did you think was happening? Because, I mean, the war was long finished by that
age. Well, I was group number 36, and my number hadn't been reached then. But I thought, we all thought we were going out to the Far East, to India, or I thought that way, to fight the Japanese.
Now, what did you think when VJ Day then, that's August, I think 15th, isn't it, 1945, what do you think of that? Do you remember any celebrations?
No, I can't remember that, to be quite truthful. Can't remember it.
So what happens next then?
The next thing, after I've been to these various aerodromes I've mentioned, we were sent overseas to Egypt, en route to Palestine.
Now, you left in, what, right at the start of March, don't you?
The end of February, the beginning of March, yes. And the SS Strathnaber.
What do you remember about that voyage?
It was a voyage where there were a lot of nuns on the ship going out abroad, a lot of civilians and civil servants as well going out to various parts of the empire, because it was going further on. We dropped off at Egypt. And we were, I think, if I'm not mistaken, we were the only regiment aboard, the detachment of the glider pilots.
What do you remember of it?
I remember it being a very, very pleasant voyage, not much military aspects of it at all, more or less civilians, though we were in uniform. And continual music. I Want to Get Married was the song which was continually played over the intercom. And also the fact that you could buy real soap. I think I mentioned the name of the soap.
Oh, Imperial Leather.
Imperial Leather soap, which was absolute luxury. And then we landed at Port Said after an uneventful voyage.
Now, what happened in Egypt? Where were you based in Egypt?
We were based at a place called Kassassin, near Ismailia.
Now, what was the camp like?
It was just a tented camp in the desert. One particular thing about that I forgot to mention. Before we left England, we thought we'd take a souvenir of England with us. And we were out one evening and we saw a signpost pointing to Beccles, market town in Suffolk. So I'm sorry to admit it, we took it off its mounting, Beccles. And when we got to Kassassin camp, we mounted on a stick. And there was a sign pointing to Beccles. And I bet all the British soldiers, what the devil is this doing there? How has this got here? If we had done. I don't know if it's still there or what happened to it. And that was very unusual for us because we were highly disciplined.
And what were you doing at Kassassin?
We were just waiting to go off to Palestine.
What were your first impressions of the desert, well, of Egypt?
Well, the first impressions were the railways. We went by train from Port Said to Tel El Kebir, I think it was, and then by vehicle up to El Kassassin. On the railway, every time you stopped at the railway line, there were hordes and hordes of vendors, Egyptian vendors, selling hard-boiled eggs and bread. And all you could hear was eggs and bread, eggs and bread, eggs and bread. And we're...
Would you buy off them?
No, some people did, but we didn't fancy them really, because you didn't know what the hygiene was on them. I was always warned about hygiene in Egypt, be very careful of anything you do, and anything you eat.
Now, what was the camp like when you got there? It was tents, wasn't it?
Well, just tented camp, yes, tented camps. And
what were your tents like? How many in a tent?
No, I can't remember. I've got a picture of them, but at the moment I can't remember what they were like.
Okay, what happened next?
Well, whilst we're there, as I said earlier on, we're waiting to go to Palestine, and before we went to Palestine, we had a day out in Cairo, my colleagues and I. We thought, shall we go to see the pyramids or just stay in the city of Cairo? And of course, the flesh pots of Cairo called us, and I'm afraid to say we turned down the chance of going to the pyramids. And I was thinking about four or five of us, and I was a senior soldier. In effect, I was in charge of them. And we're wandering around Cairo, taking in the sights and sounds, and seeing another new city, and we're amazed by the crowds and the number of people around. And just as it got dusk, we're walking down the street, and the military police came along and said, "You're out of bounds." We said, "What do you mean we're out of bounds?" That there's a sign up the road that out of bounds to British soldiers. Well, I said, "We never saw that." I was the spokesman, of course, for the group. And we generally did not see it. No excuse was accepted. We were taken by the military police, taken to Abbasiyah military prison. And we were arraigned in front of the commanding officer, and I told him it was a genuine mistake. And he gave us a terrific lecture about keeping your eyes open and being sure where you're going, because Cairo was a dangerous city. So they put us there, we stayed there overnight, and the next morning they just let us go and we went back to camp. So as I can always say, I spent the night in an Egyptian jail.
Now, anything else?
No, and then after...
You weren't there a long way.
No, we weren't there long. And after we went by 1,500 weight trucks up to Palestine.
That's in April, early April.
I presume it was about that time, yes. We went by trucks across the Sinai Peninsula, up through Gaza, then to Beersheba, and up to our aerodrome in southern Palestine.
What was that lorry journey like? That's a hell of a journey by a lorry.
Well, very, very, very interesting. And I also remember we had to stop on the Egyptian and Palestinian border, and we had a lieutenant with us, a young lieutenant, and he said, "I'm very tired," he says, "I really could do it, I'm not feeling well," he says. He says, "Take my revolver," he says, "and take charge of what's going on." I'd never fired a revolver in my life, because it wasn't part of our training, and of course officers were issued with them. But there was very, very little flying done in Palestine, except one which I'll tell you about later on.
Where did you go to?
I think it was RAF Castina, Q-A-S-T-I-N-A, RAF Castina. That was an RAF aerodrome.
Now, what was it like? Can you describe the base?
Well, it's just an ordinary aerodrome with gliders on it, and also four engine tugs, Halifax tugs. And normal RAF discipline and routine were not there. But we did very, very little flying. I think I only had perhaps two or three circuits of what we call circuit of the aerodrome, just to keep a hand in.
So they did have gliders, but you didn't do much flying.
We didn't do much flying. We're mostly told about the security situation from the Jewish irregulars who were attempting to get rid of the British soldiers.
Now, were you briefed about the security situation?
Oh, yes.
It was quite complicated, wasn't it?
Yes, we were briefed about the various organisations who were anti-British, and how careful we had to be when we were out.
And do you remember what they told you? Who were the baddies, if you like, or the goodies, you know?
Well, the Irguns of Iluemi, they were one, and then the Stern gang. Those are the two I particularly remember. And of course, you couldn't recognise them because they got no uniform. They were just civilians, so you didn't know who your friend and who your enemy. And whilst we were there, I went to visit a Jewish family, because my co-pilot, who went with me to Ireland, Wally Waltak, he was discharged just before we went to Palestine. And he was with me at Ireland, but he was not taken prisoner. He got back home. And when he heard we were going to Palestine, he said, "Well, I've got some relatives." He was of Polish descent. "I've got some relatives living in Petah Tikva, near Tel Aviv, the northern part of Tel Aviv. So he said, he asked if we would go there, if I would go there and visit him. And one day when we were off duty, a friend and I went. We went fully armed because you walked around, you're fully armed with Sten guns and bits and grenades and that. I went and visited this family. As we got into the street in which they lived in Petah Tikva, there was a sort of a menacing attitude. We could see people looking at us as we walked along, people passing us looking at us, people looking at us behind the curtain. What are two British soldiers doing here?
And this is a Jewish quarter?
Jewish, Petah Tikva, yes. And we found the house, knocked on the door. The occupier opened the door, and his face dropped when he saw us. He said, what are two British soldiers doing here? Mind you, he was very courteous to us when we told him who we were, and I was a friend of Wally's. Passed a message on to Wally, given to him and his family. And a very courteous, very polite, but on edge all the time. And we realised we're uninvited and unwanted. So we made up excuses and left. But we weren't very well received at all there.
Now, what kind of internal security operations were you doing? Were you guarding, patrolling, or what exactly, searching? What were you doing?
We did a variety of things. One of the things we did was guarding the airfield at night, driving around the airfield in jeeps at night, firing flares through the perimeter wires, seeing if we could see any intruders. Well, we never did see any. And another thing was assisting the Palestine police.
How did you get on with them? Tell us a bit about the Palestine police and how you helped them.
Well, we helped them on one particular occasion. They were the information gatherers. And if they got a tip off or they knew there was some illegal activity going on, they asked for a British escort, a military escort. And we were sent out, my friends and I, to escort them one day to a kibbutz. And in this kibbutz was a prize bull, beautiful animal, standing in a stall with straw on the floor. And the Palestine police led the bull out of the stall, cleared the stall away, underneath was removable concrete blocks. And when you remove the concrete blocks, in the depression left was armaments in there. That's what they hid them under the bomb. They never thought that anybody would find them there, but obviously the Palestine police had received the information and knew what they were after. And they were the people in charge who owned the bull were arrested. That we didn't hear any more about them. Another occasion, we had a court of inquiry on the airfield. Some of the army stores had been stolen, and there was a court of inquiry in which I was a member.
Why were you a member? What happened?
Well, the officers just picked about two or three of us to sit with them and hear the evidence from the storekeeper of what had happened and what had happened. And we had to reach a conclusion about the theft of these stores. And we reached the conclusion that we think it was an inside job. We couldn't prove it, but I'm afraid the poor old Arab labourers who worked on the aerodrome got the blame for stealing the stuff. I don't think they did. I think it was an inside job.
British
job. We also had, we used to have a drill session once, I think it was once a week or once a fortnight there. And we still drilled under the Sergeant Major. And there was Arab labourers, always stopped what they were doing to look at us, because I'd always say to myself, we were very, very good at drilling. We made a very good impression on the Arabs.
Did you enjoy that kind of drill session?
Oh yes, I did. I think people talk about drill makes you an automaton, it doesn't. It makes you part of a group, makes you proud of your uniform and proud of your ability to act with other people. I enjoyed it.